See, Trevino is a longtime stand-up comedian who is bringing that craft to Austin at Bass Concert Hall on Friday, March 8th. It is going to be a hell of a good time, and Steve is now nice enough to join me for a few minutes to talk about that and more. Steve, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Oh, look, you know, I got Tatiana assistant. I got Captain Evil putting lights on me. We're doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I got to give you a little bit of credit to start out here, because over the last few years, Austin has turned into a sort of stand-up mecca, and a lot of people give Joe Rogan credit for that, but what I tell people is Steve Trevino was really the first big-time comedian to move back to Central Texas a few years before Rogan did, so kudos to you on having the foresight to realize that, one, California is a giant shithole, but two, Texas is a great place for a comedian to live.
Well, you know, I mean, I'll be honest with you. Growing up in Texas, I never really fit in LA, you know, had to be there, thought I had to be there, and then, you know, wanted to come back home and missed home and had kids and wanted my kids to be close to their grandparents. And there was a moment where I was like, I looked at my wife, I go, we might be kicking ourselves out of the business, but I'm going home, you know, and New Braunfels has always been one of those places that has always been special to me. So we moved back and yes, I did it before everybody else, you know, and I actually, you know, wanted to leave the scene because I just wasn't, nothing against those guys and all the things they do. It just wasn't me, you know, and the scene followed me. And I'm like, oh, I left there to get away from it. So I don't really feel the need to go to the mothership or to go to Austin and do stand-up. I just, you know, that is not my scene. And I think my stand-up resonates that. I mean, we're very simple man, just like my special that's coming out. And, you know, I talk about my wife, my kids, my family, and my neighbors are normal people. So, you know, thank you for saying that because, yeah, I mean, you know, Texas is an amazing place. And I probably should have kept my mouth shut hanging out at the Comedy Store.
So considering that you are in New Braunfels, which is pretty equidistant, actually it's a little bit closer to San Antonio for measuring distances, but you've got a great comedy club in San Antonio. You obviously have these clubs in Austin. Are you working material out at any local clubs, or are you pretty much doing it all on the road just with the understanding of having a great grasp of what's funny and what may not work on stage?
Well, once you find your quote unquote voice, it gets a lot easier to write, you know, and I've been doing this for, gosh, 22 years. So, you know, I know who I am. I know my angles. I know my style of storytelling. So writing has gotten easier. So a lot of times I'm writing in my head, you know, and then I'm going on the road and I'm like, well, maybe I should tell this story or maybe I should say this. So, you know, definitely writing on the road. But by the time I take it on stage, because I've been doing this so long and I know my brand and I know my voice, it's pretty much already written in my head. Mm. So by the time I walk on stage on the road, you've got a bit that is, you know, 60% done. Now it's just a matter of fine tuning. So I'm not the kind of comic that goes to the, you know, open mics or the clubs to work on materials. And a lot of other guys, they work that way, right? They go to the open mics, they work on material. I'm so dialed in on my brand that I already know what I want to talk about, how I want to talk about it.
Everybody has a different style, and that's why it's really cool to talk to you and a lot of other comedians about what works for you. I'm curious because you did say that you know your voice, but it takes comics time to really figure out what their voice is. Was there some sort of epiphanous moment or something from your time on stage where it finally started to click for you? Or is it more a matter of just putting in so many hours over so many years and at some point looked around and realized that you had found that voice?
Well, there was a moment where, you know, falling in love with my wife, girlfriend then, where we moved in together and, you know, you're going through that transition in life where you're like, man, do I really want to leave this single life behind? And do I want to commit to this girl? And my thought was, man, this girl's amazing and I can't screw this up. But all the things that came with it. And I remember walking on stage one day and it wasn't even a bit. It was just me literally bitching. And I go, this woman that lives in my house, like what kind of animal squeezes the toothpaste from the middle? And the freaking, you know, the place erupted. And I go, oh, other people feel this too. So that was the gateway, if you will, into, man, I really want to talk about the frustrations that I have with this woman that I'm living with. I'm absolutely madly in love with her, but oh my God, she drives me crazy. And then in relatable, you know, I was doing kind of general material. Then the second half of it was, hey, let me tell you my frustration with being married and this woman I live with. And, you know, that's the stuff that went viral. And I just have a lot of fun because I imitate my wife. And if people know anything about imitation, imitation is the biggest form of flattery. Yep. Right. And then, so there's all these other women that watch my show and go, oh my God, he's doing me. I want to take my husband. So, you know, so there was that moment of like, man, this really worked. And I was so honest about it and so real about it. And it's almost like Captain Petty. Like it's a petty thing to bitch about, but oh my God, why are you squeezing the toothpaste from the middle? And then everybody just went, oh my God, yes. And then that was it for me.
I think that's part of the brilliance of stand-up is taking some of those little things in life and poking fun at them. And you've done that so well over the years as a husband, as a family man too. I mean, you see my kids' pictures in the background here. I've got a 9 and 7-year-old now. And for somebody who works in radio and does take my life to the airwaves, because that's my life and that's what I know. And as somebody who I think has a decent sense of humor, I think that I can find fun ways to mock life's ridiculousness. It is right. A nonstop source of comedy, but there are plenty of challenges in 2024, Steve, as being a parent. And we're also, I don't know about you guys on your end, we're also in busy seasons, busy sports season. I mean, I'm not even kidding you. We have 3 different sports that we're having to cater to this weekend.
Right.
Football, soccer, basketball. I know that you're a coach for your son's little league team. What do you think the biggest challenge is for parents in 2024?
Man, you know what? I love that you brought this up because my special that comes out on March 12th on Netflix is called Simple Man. That is one of the biggest topics that I tackle. And the biggest challenge, I think, is how do you raise these spoiled kids, right? These kids that have so much, these kids that have unlimited cartoons, unlimited video games. You know, they live in a bigger house than we grew up in. They're in nicer cars than we grew up in. They're in, you know, so that for me and my wife is the biggest challenge. And I tackle that in this special because, you know, you sit there and you go, man, I got to keep this kid humble, but how can I keep him humble if he lives in the house that I live in? Well, I don't want him to live in this house, but I want to live in this house and I've earned it. So now he has to live here, you know? So it's, for me, I think the biggest challenge is just, you know, keeping these kids humble, trying to figure out a way to raise them in a very spoiled, privileged life. You know, you think about the song that Biggie had in the 90s where he said, you know, 50-inch screen, Nintendo, all the things he named. I'm like, well, those are all normal now. Yeah. Right? He's talking about living lavishly and in the 90s with his 50-inch screen and his cell phone and you look at that and you go, man, that wasn't that long ago. And all the things that he's talking about that give him a rich lifestyle is now below normal. So, I mean, you know, so that's what we tackle. We go back in time in my set and talk about me as a child and the things that I grew up with. And then we bring it back to, you know, the challenges that I have raising this kid and these kids in this spoiled world.
It's such a great point because you want to give your kids an easier life than what you had, but you do run the risk of raising soft children who become soft adults if you're not careful. And so you want to find ways to challenge them, to keep them tough, to help them understand the value of sticking with something and putting your effort into getting better at something. And sports are great for that. but I wonder if it needs to stretch beyond sports too. Like my kids' calendars are filled with sports. They do some extracurricular stuff through their elementary school, which I'm happy with, but it's like, what are some ways that I can make life a little bit more difficult with for them without necessarily like putting their life online in the process? Because there's obviously a balance there.
We literally switched teams because of some drama and some BS. But it turned out to be a blessing. It was one of those things that I had to tell my son, hey, we have to leave because this this organization and these people are immoral, starts with an M, ends with an I. This organization is a terrible organization. I, for my moral standards, have to leave. And it broke his heart. And we had to go to another team. Now we're at Canes. And you know, we're very happy at Canes. But, you know, he had to leave his friends behind. He had to go to another team. And he goes, because he was the shortstop on the other team. And it lit a fire. And he's like, Dad, I got to earn my spot. I got to beat these kids out, right? And that's the other thing that's scary with sports is, man, sports is such a great place to raise good kids, teach them responsibility, teamwork, all that good stuff. But these parents are getting crazy. I mean, these personal lessons and these private lessons and travel ball and, you know, trying to make the best baseball player in the world at 8. It's insane. You know, my son plays, he's in jujitsu and he's in flag football and he wants to play basketball. Go play basketball. Go. But this year round specialize in a sport and these parents are out of their minds crazy on how bad they want their kid to succeed at a sport. And I'm sitting here going, I'm just trying to raise a good man. You know, and fortunately for me, my son's amazing. He's a shortstop, but you know, it was one of those things that you talk about where you go, man, here's some diversity and some things for him to overcome that fell in our lap. So let's use it as a learning moment to teach my son that, hey, sometimes bad things happen and we got to leave and we got to stick to our morals and we have to overcome obstacles. And so it was a really, really big blessing for us.
That's a great point there. And look, parents of kids on teams are one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is that a lot of these leagues are very volunteer driven. That's why I give you a ton of credit for stepping up and helping your son's little league team out, because one, it's just a lack of willing bodies to do so. And the second problem, though, a lot of times is that there are people who in their heart, they're trying to do something right by stepping up and coaching the team, but they have no coaching abilities. They may not have an understanding of the sport. And it's like, in a way that can set things back even further, but you still give them credit for at least trying. But then you have the coaches who step up. I coach my daughter's volleyball team and it's second and third grade girls, Steve. We don't keep score the first 7 weeks of the season. Week 8, we keep score. Week 9 is the tournament. The girls' eyes get saucer big when they see the scoreboard, win or lose. But I watched a coach and the second and third grade girls volleyball team blatantly cheat to try and win a game against our team a couple seasons ago. I'm like, really, dude, does this matter that much to you? But this is the same coach that I watch all his kids just look at him in terror because he's just ripping into them when they're not doing something right. It's like, bro, if you just get these girls to stop doing cartwheels before the serve is
you're winning.
Put it over to them. Yeah. Or get them to serve the ball over occasionally. You're doing something positive here, but you're turning this into a hugely negative experience, unfortunately.
But parents are running off the refs.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants the ref. They're running off good coaches because political BS, right? Why is my kid not playing shortstop? My kid should be shortstop. Because you have to remember, every mom, it's a travel mom, she wants the best 8 kids on the field and her kid. That's what she wants, right? And I've noticed too, I mean, you know, for me, my experience, it's more the moms than the dads. I mean, the moms are like, let's win. They're walking around with their Stanley Cups and their, you know, their wagons. And I mean, they're like, let's win, let's win, let's win. But ultimately sports, you know, for me should be, the odds of your kid becoming a professional athlete are slim to none. The odds of your kid becoming a D1 athlete are slim to none. The odds of your kid getting a scholarship to go play college ball are slim to none. And if you're looking at this sport to try to pay your bills later on and get a college scholarship, you're looking at it all wrong. You know, you should look at it as, hey, my kid's a kid. He should love to play the sport, have a lot of fun doing it, and enjoy himself. But like you said, when people are screaming and the moms behind the scenes are pulling strings and talking to the organization and trying to get dads canceled, then I mean, it's unbelievable, you know? And you sit there and you go, guys, they're eight in Texas. I left California to come here and hopefully have some reasonable human beings around me. And they're not. It's the same shit. They're crazy people. Crazy.
Yeah, unfortunately, stupidity reigns supreme regardless of where you are. And it's weird, too, because I feel like COVID broke a lot of people's brains to where people doubled down on their stupidity. I was at a stoplight the other day, and there was a person in front of me at the red light, and the light turns green, and I wait 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds so that I finally give a little bit of a beep, because it's clearly clear that the person in front of me is looking down at their cell phone versus paying attention to the light so they can go. And in response, the person didn't give me a courtesy wave.
Yeah.
They gave me the finger. Like I was doing something wrong to them.
Like you're the problem.
You're the one holding traffic up here, guy. I'm just trying to help move this process along.
Yeah, like you're the problem, right? Everybody else is the problem. Everybody else is the issue, you know, and it's egos, right? You know, yeah. I mean, when you go there and you go, you got these coaches that they're volunteers and they don't want any help. And you're like, why would you not want help? Well, because they want to be king cheese, right? Or like you said, everybody else is going, how dare you call me out on my BS, right? You are not allowed to tell me that I'm the problem. Like, no, but you are the problem. And then when you call them on it, all of a sudden it turns into me. Well, F you for calling me out. Right. And it's insane. But that's why I think comedy's doing so well. I mean, everybody needs a break. Everybody needs to go and sit down and have a laugh. And I will say that I think comedy has kind of pushed this envelope of everybody's trying to be edgy. Everybody's trying to be non-woke. You know, what can I get away with? Everybody's trying to be political. And me, I'm trying to do none of that. You know, I'm like God, country, family. Let me tell you some great stories about my family. We're not talking about politics. We're not, it's not edgy. You know, my comedy has strong language, but it's not dirty. You know, I'm not trying to force my opinions on you. Like here's some great stories about me, my wife, my kids. Things we're going through, things we're trying to overcome. Let's have a laugh about it. At the end, let's thank the veterans. Let's thank the hardworking people of the world. And let's go about our day, right? And this new comedy is, in my opinion, is just, I'm going to do everything not to be woke. You know, we went from, you know, 10 years ago, it was all woke comedy, right? Don't offend, you know, watch what you're saying. Now it's like, oh my God, can I make rape funny? Well, it's not, right? Can I do this? And can I push the envelope? And can I make abortion funny? And can I make, you know, and you sit there and you go, for me at least, I'm like, do we need to go there? But it has become this anti-woke comedy that, and if you like that, great, right? Because different strokes for different folks. I've just gone the opposite where I'm like, look, man, I just want to tell great stories, have a good time. I'm trying not to offend you. And let's enjoy our laugh.
Yeah, you're right about that. I have sensed that recently that the pendulum has swung to the opposite end now versus where it was 5 years ago. And I think there's a way to talk about taboo subjects responsibly on stage where you're maybe poking holes at both sides of an argument. And there are certain subjects that may be off limits altogether, depending on the comedian. But when it's being done right with a more serious subject, hopefully you're hitting both sides in the end. But I'll admit to you right now, Steve, because I'm thinking about the types of comedians that I can expose to my kids because they know I love comedy. They're like, what's this stand-up comedy all about? I'm like, I'm just going to have to show you guys some examples. There's a list of comedians that I'm starting to put together. I don't know if 9 and 7 is maybe a little bit too young. It probably is. It's probably going to be a few years away from them. They both have great senses of humor. So I'm like, who are the types of comedians that I can show them to that aren't going to be extremely vulgar, over the top,
right,
or exposing ideas that are entirely too mature for their little brains? You're on that list. It's like you, Brian Regan. There are a couple of other people. Fluffy's a great example. Yep. Absolutely.
Fluffy's a great one to take. He's non-political and he does not even say a bad word. He is always clean.
And my kids have no problems with the bad words, unfortunately, because their dad and mom are foul mouths. So
us too. Yeah, people go, man, your kids don't curse. Well, my daughter, we had to check her a couple times. She's only three, but you know, my son doesn't curse because I'm like, hey, dude, these are adult words.
Yeah.
You know, and you're gonna hear them and deal with it.
Yeah, the way that I've always said it to my kids, and unfortunately, I've got a story that I told recently about my daughter saying the F word just before her third birthday, but she used it in the proper context. Like, she didn't cuss at somebody. She said she wanted her effing sunglasses because it was bright outside in July in Texas. I'm like, hey, if there's ever anything to use the F word towards, it's the sun in Texas in July. But I've always told my kids, look, I'm not going to tell you can't say these words, but you need to be very careful with how you use them. Context matters. Right. And your audience matters too. If you say the F word around one of your grandmothers or at school, even if you think
there's
it's
a problem,
your friends, but one of your friends goes and tells a teacher, you're in deep trouble. And while you may not be in more trouble with me at home, you're going to have to deal with the consequences in that situation.
And people laugh because they go, man, Steve, you're always dropping the F bomb, you know? And I go, well, first of all, I grew up that way. But in 25 years of doing stand up, thousands and thousands of radio interviews, never once have I got anybody in trouble. Because like you said, know your audience.
Yeah.
Know where you're at. Know what you're doing. I want to be back on somebody's radio air. I'm not going to get them in trouble. I'm not going to drop an F-bomb, right? So knowing your audience and I tell people, because, you know, look, like Nate Bargatze, for example, he's an amazing comedian, you know, and he is super funny. But in his stand-up, he's the woman and I'm the man. And he is the Diet Coke to my Coke, right? I'm more aggressive. I'm more honest. I'm more forward, than he is, but he's an amazing comedian, you know, and I love watching Nate Bargatze. I mean, he's become one of my, favorites when he comes up on little clips, you know, but we're definitely, you know, he's me, but softer, and I'm just the harsher, more in your face version of it, right? And a different perspective. But you know, there's a comic for everybody, you know, and nobody should be canceled for being a comedian. You know, if you don't like somebody's style of comedy, just move on.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Everybody thinks that their opinion is the opinion. No opinion. Everybody has an opinion. You know, if you don't like Steve Trevino, myself, then just move on. You don't have to sit there and go, oh, let me now tell the world why I think Steve Trevino sucks. Well, I have 5 million social media followers. There's 5 million people that for sure like me. So just move on, dude. Go watch your comedian, you know?
You said your 3-year-old daughter was using some vulgar language. What was the context there?
I kind of lose it in traffic, you know? And, you know, she goes, effing truck, you know, because the truck wouldn't move out of the way. And my wife just looked at me and we both kind of like, and you know, when you're like, don't laugh, because if we laugh,
yeah,
it's going to encourage, right? So we're both like dying, trying not to laugh. But, it, you know, she's my little 3-year-old. She's my little, you know, she don't care, man. I mean, she's a gangster. You know, my son is follow the rules, don't get in trouble, you know, perfect grades, you know, coachable. My daughter's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to do what I do. And you're going to let me do it. You know, totally different kids.
So in listening to you on Bert Kreischer's podcast, literally 2 months before COVID hit, you were talking about making more of a conscious effort in making the leap from comedy clubs to larger venues. And sure enough, for these last couple of years, you've been doing that. So first off, kudos to you. Congratulations on that. But you also talked with Bert at the time about making sure to keep ticket prices reasonable for people who wanted to come see you for a night out, even if it is at like a Bass concert hall, like people can see you here in Austin on March 8th. So I commend you for that as well. I'm curious though, how have you taken to those larger stages and those larger audiences? Because there is a pretty big difference in terms of the environment versus your comedy club that seats 250 people.
Man, it's been a challenge. You know, I like to touch and feel and talk to the people that come to my shows. Obviously, when you're doing, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 seats, you can't meet everybody. So it's been a huge adjustment for me. Trying to keep those ticket prices lower. You know, Ticketmaster's doing this dynamic pricing where, you know, they're automatically raising prices because they're trying to avoid scalpers. So, I mean, it's been a struggle and a challenge to give the audience the same thing I gave them at the clubs. So, you know, we have a video element as you're walking in, you get to watch a slideshow and we're playing music and they're getting to see something different, right? Austin, for example, because it's Austin, Matt Castillo, an amazing Texas country artist. He's going to be playing before. So I'm trying to give the audience a little more so that when they go, hey, we had a nice night out, right? There was a musician, there was a video, we saw a great open, you know, I'm hiring opening acts that are not your typical opening acts. These guys are headliners in their own right. So I'm bringing other headliners with me, paying them headliner money so that the whole show is funny, start to finish, video. So just trying to give the audience more so that they can go, hey, maybe I didn't get to meet him, but it was a nice night out. The Bass Concert Hall is a beautiful place to take my wife. We got dressed up. We saw the video. Matt Castillo performed. Steve's opening act was hilarious. And then Steve came out and gave us an hour. And then also, you can do the meet and greet if you donate to Helicopters for Heroes or if you buy merchandise. So I'm still giving that opportunity, like, hey, you donate to Helicopters for Heroes, you're in the meet and greet. You bought my merchandise, you're in the meet and greet. And sometimes that turns out to be 1,000 people, but at least I'm raising money for veterans and trying to find different special ways to give the audience what they deserve. And it's not easy.
That's a really cool concept. I've been to shows where comedians have opened for musicians. I don't think I've seen it the other way around. So well done on that. Do you know who the opener is going to be for the Austin show?
I think we're doing Jason Rouse. Now, Jason, I don't know if you ever heard of him. He is, talk about rough. He's rough, but he's really funny and he does it in a really cool way. I'm kind of, you know, I put him on this show because he is rough, but gosh, he makes me laugh, you know, and he lets the audience know, like, I'm saying some outlandish shit, but I'm kidding, right? And also the way he looks, he's got these silver teeth and these piercings and the tattoos, and he walks on stage and he's kind of got this creepy white guy feel. But, you know, if you know he's joking, you're having a great time. There's going to be people that are going to go, I can't believe he said that. You know, nobody would ever do that. Well, it's a joke, right? So Jason Rouse coming out to open, be hilarious. Matt Castillo, as people walk in, jamming out acoustic, letting people know what's up. Video playing. It's going to be a wonderful night. And Austin is such a great town, and I'm looking forward to partying there and hanging out with the wife. We're going to rent a car, have a driver so that Renee and I can drink and have a good time, you know, so we're really looking forward to it. More importantly, you know, March 12th, I'm anxious. I'm nervous. I hope people love the new special.
Since you mentioned Helicopters for Heroes, people can not only go to stevetrevino.com to check out tour days, to get tickets for a lot of those shows. They can also donate to Helicopters for Heroes. But for people who are unfamiliar with this organization, would you mind filling folks in on that?
Yeah, you know, we are a nonprofit. We spend the entire year raising money for veterans. 96% give back. We are 100% volunteer. We have a golf tournament in Dallas. We do the barbecue cook-offs. We do my podcast to raise money. Recently, I had Bill Goldberg on a Christmas podcast. We raised 70 grand. At the end of February, literally last week, we took 130 veterans out. 2 years ago, 130 veterans out, put them in helicopters. They shot wild hogs out of those helicopters. And we ended up raising $800,000 last year.
Wow.
They went back to veterans on top of, you know, letting them play golf with us, putting them up in the hotels, flying them in, putting them in those helicopters, and then giving those veterans an amazing weekend. You know, we tend to forget that these men and women volunteer to defend us, and they don't ask questions. They just take care of us. one in every nine homeless people on the streets of America is a veteran. One in every nine. Used to be 22. We're up to 40 veterans taking their own life every single day. So, you know, we have to stop waiting for these piece of shit politicians to take care of our veterans, and we got to do it ourselves. You know, I'm not a whiner. I'm a doer, you know, so I've gone out there and we raise money. So it's a wonderful organization. And I do want to warn people that there are organizations out there that they are a charity, but they got $1 million CEOs and they've got, you know, $1 million of expenses where they're out doing, you know, stuff that has nothing to do with veterans. We are 100% volunteer and we are 96% give back. Feel free to look us up.
Yeah, way too many that give that minimum 5 or 10% of what they bring in to the actual charitable cause. And you've also mentioned your podcast with your wife throughout the course of this conversation, Steve Trevino and Captain Evil. You can get to the podcast through your website or wherever you listen to podcasts. I've heard comedians talk about how being on stage is therapeutic for working through your own problems. Just how therapeutic is doing a podcast with your wife, a weekly podcast with your wife, for whatever things are going on in y'all's relationship?
I mean, it is literally, you know, couples therapy for us every single week. I mean, you know, and to be honest with you, all of us, none of us, we never take the time to sit down with your wife for an hour, put the cell phone away and talk about your week.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're being recorded also keeps us nice. So it is a very valuable thing to me and my wife that, man, we just get to talk to each other. Yeah. You know, we get to connect and it's almost our date, you know, and it's scheduled and we have to do it. And, you know, we talk about our week and we praise each other for our hard work's worth a week, or we talk about our struggles raising our kids, or, but it is a real conversation that me and my wife get to have undisturbed in front of an audience so that we behave ourselves. And it really is therapeutic. I mean, Renee, come here, honey. Captain Evil's here right now. Question for you is the podcast therapeutic to you?
It keeps me from strangling Steve when we're having a heated discussion. It accomplishes that.
But Renee, you know, Captain Evil here has become a star in her own right. You know, she boasts almost 100,000 social media followers. She was just at the Home and Garden show in San Antonio. Wow. She had billboards all over town. And so it's been great for both of us. And, you know, my wife's very, very talented. And, you know, we do this together. You know, we are a team. Win or lose, we're in it together.
Renee, how have you taken to the celebrity?
Oh, well, you know what? People will check us in the comments. Like if one of us missteps on the podcast, they totally check us. So any celebrity, our heads get smushed right away.
Oh, they humbled her a couple of weeks. A couple of weeks ago, every comment was like, Renee's wrong. She's a bitch. And I'm like, oh my God, finally. Somebody sees it. It's not just me.
You usually the podcast listeners side with me. So when they don't side with me, I gotta like take note.
Well, they side with her because our demographic is female. That's why. So, you know, we found out very early on that my stand-up draws a very female-centric audience. So our podcast is very female-centric. So of course they're gonna agree with her. You know, I gotta get some more guys on there. So we can get a little bit of a balance, but we are definitely 70% female. But at the end of the day, you know, Renee and I, she's an actor, went to NYU, and we just decided to take this career together, and it has paid off in dividends.
I love that. All right, last question. Now, I want to ask both of you this because smart people tend to ask themselves questions, and usually a lot of questions too, but there tends to be one overriding question at a given point in time. What is one question that you find yourself asking right now more than the others? Maybe other than why the fuck did I decide to appear on this radio show right now?
That's a tough one. You know, I think my biggest fear right now is do I want to be famous? I absolutely love my life right now. I make a lot of money. I pay my bills. Maybe one in 20 people will recognize me when I'm out and about. And I like it. And with this special coming out and the press that we're already getting with Netflix and you know, we're doing Good Morning America soon. And I mean, all this press is coming. I think this special is going to blow us up. And I'm really wondering, do I want this? You know, I want to be a stand-up. I don't want to be famous. And it's been very anxious and I have a lot of anxiety about it because I like being noticed once in every 20, but when it turns into one in every five, I don't know if I'm going to like that, you know? So Renee, you have an answer for that?
Mine is, how do I want to spend my time? I feel like now more than ever, we're super busy and running at an incredible pace. And so just how do I want to be using and spending my time? I started waking up an hour earlier to try and get more done. But within that, like beyond that, I don't think I can give myself an extra hour in the day. So beyond that, how do I want to spend what I've got?
I mean, she woke up an extra hour and accomplished exactly the same thing as she normally does. So
that's not true.
No, but hey, prioritizing, because busy people, we like to put a lot on our plate, but it can be too much too. So you have to learn to say no to certain things. And that can be really hard when you've accustomed to a certain routine.
No, we're definitely taking, you know, a step back after recovering from COVID and definitely taking those holidays off, the Easters and the 4th of July's and, you know, her birthday, and just really trying to find, you know, that family time. Even though, you know, we are the house, you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
No.
We're the house that everybody, we go, oh, you guys are doing Thanksgiving, right? Well, I guess so.
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing Christmas at your house, right? Yeah. Yep. Oh, New Year's party, right? You're doing a New Year's party? You got a big house, you know? So even if we try to go, I'm taking the time off, we're still not really off. So, but again, you know, I love reconnecting with family and friends because I'm not off on the weekends. So I don't get to see my high school friends and my cousins and my sister because I'm always gone on the weekend. So we use those holidays to reconnect and have a good time with our friends and family.
See, that's the problem with buying a beautiful ranch on hundreds of acres in the at the edge of the Texas Hill Country. You have no choice but to be the house.
We're the house, yes.
Well, Steve, Renee, thank you guys so much for the time today. Going to encourage people to go to stevetrevino.com. That's where you can buy tickets for his Bass Concert Hall show on March 8th. Steve and Renee are actually going to go have a night of it here in Austin after that. So have fun with that as well. You can also check out the podcast through the website. And yes, Helicopters for Heroes, more information and the ability to donate can be found there as well. And make sure to check them out. I was going to ask heading into this conversation when that Netflix special was going to drop. But Simple Man will be available March 13th, you said?
12th.
Wow.
March 12th. I cannot wait to check that out. And thank you as always for the time, man. It's always a pleasure.
It's a pleasure, brother. We'll see you.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. Talk to you next time on Books on Pod.